Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Gavaza, and for today, we're going to get into back into the world of fintech, financial technology, as we, you know, explore some of the things that are happening on the blockchain, in the world of, the blockchain. And this is something that we've covered from a number of different angles over the years. And for today, we are adding, all of that. And for today, we're just going to be, chatting about, some of the efforts that are being made, through blockchains to actually bolster global financial systems. To make sense of things for today, we are joined by Deus XP. They call themselves DXP. And we're just going to get a sense of, what's going on out there. Joining me, for today's conversation, we are joined by the team. First we've got Maria Harati, and then we are also joined by Richard Cook. Team, greetings to you today.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And thank you for letting us be part of your incredible podcast.
So, a good place for us to start, for today's conversation is, maybe getting a sense of, DXP itself, just trying to understand, where do you guys play in the world of, in the world of blockchain, in the world of global finance and the like. Maybe we can get a little bit of the elevator pitch, on the business and what it does. Not sure whether between the two of you, who would like to take this one between you, Richard and Maria?
Let me start with the elevator pitch. So with Deus XP, we provide stablecoin payments for the real economy. We're seeing good growth and use of stablecoins as an alternative payment mechanism. We're seeing that not just in the crypto industry where it was born, but now out into real estate, maritime, aviation, shipping. We are seeing people use stablecoins across the globe to solve their payment problems. That's what Deus XP does.
Maybe just a quick one there. A lot of people tend to regard the blockchain with a lot of complexity. And, it's always associated with, cryptocurrencies and that type of thing. Are there any platforms that you'd want to, point at that maybe consumers or mainstream consumers would have interacted with from DXP that are being used, to mainstream some of those blockchain payments?
Yeah, I think many of your listeners will be into crypto, may have owned a bit of Bitcoin. They've been involved in some of the emerging platforms, the Ethereums, the Solanas. What we are now seeing is the emergence of a killer app of a digital dollar, a stable coin. We've seen that in Tether, and some of your listeners will be using Tether already, in Circle, which is another digitized dollar. And those are the ones that we're really interested in. Those are the ones we are seeing our clients using if they are buying a luxury apartment in Dubai. They're using those digital dollars, those stable coins, to make cross-border payments faster, cheaper, and safer.
All right. I think that gives us, a sense of what's going on out there. And maybe, Maria, we can bring you here just to get a sense of the world, of finance right now. As I said earlier on, the world of cryptocurrency has tended to be what a lot of people think about when they think of, the blockchain and all that. In the main, where are we in terms of how people have been using, blockchain? And over time, what do you make of, how widely accepted and adopted it has become? Over the years, because we've seen a lot more central banks, we've seen a lot more financial institutions embracing the underlying technology itself. So maybe you could give us a sense how it's helping to solve some of those challenges.
Sure. So we're actually seeing some of the biggest institutions globally really embracing and realizing the value of blockchain technology. For example, De Beers is trialing the Tracer program using blockchain. JP Morgan is trialing, you know, its own JP Morgan coin. And yes, while these are interesting, what we're also seeing is an adoption of stable coins as a solution for cross-border payments. So on our end, we're seeing businesses settle cross-border to suppliers or receive funds from clients using stable coins, or the way I call it, digital dollars, if you will. And we're seeing this from a treasury management perspective, and maybe more so legal entities, you know, settling intergroup. That's the environment we're seeing play out at the moment.
And just an extension to that, from what you're seeing, has the idea of, because back in the day when all of the blockchain hype and noise began, especially, you know, some of the cryptocurrencies that were built on top of the blockchain, a big part of the sell was this idea of decentralized finance. But with the way that blockchain has come now, do you think that, can I call it that dream, that ambition has been, you know, realized, or have we just, you know, circled back, you know, to a situation where instead of decentralized finance, we're simply having centralized finance making use of the blockchain?
So that's a good question. So very good. and there's so much I want to say about this, but okay. So I think we specifically within the South African, or let's say SADC environment, so we have a huge population that are unbanked. And I think that is why we're seeing the adoption of crypto, you know, as a solution to financial inclusion at this stage. So in my mind, if we have a problem with our people being unbanked, we also have a problem with our SMEs. I think the reason we're seeing this rapid adoption of crypto is because it provides that solution for financial inclusion. I mean, so some small, medium, you know, enterprises can't get a bank account, or rather find it hard, specifically in the SADC. These are, you know, enterprises that have needs for multiple products, but only access or use perhaps a select subset of them. Actually, according to the FinScope 2020 survey, 80% of SMEs are banked, right? However, of those who are banked, only 30% of SMEs have a business bank account. And the remainder use the owners, or yeah, I guess the owners' personal accounts for dual purposes, for business and personal usage. You know, even with the use of a personal account for business purposes, 18% of those micro enterprises, which are mainly informal, are still excluded from the formal banking sector. Now, if you're running a business in South Africa, right, and need to make a payment to another country within the SADC, it's tough, and it shouldn't be so difficult. You know, economically, you're supposed to operate within these economic areas, but it's incredibly challenging. If you're a large organization, I get it. You've got banks, you know, the large banks that bank these areas. But if you're an SME, good luck. And that's the vast majority of companies. So I think where the blockchain really comes into it, and where we're seeing it really take its foothold in the economy nowadays, is that a stablecoin payment is faster and cheaper, and really not fraught with the holdups and delays that we've seen historically within this environment.
Richard, your take on this one around decentralized finance, and whether that's come to the promise of a decade ago, or whether we found ourselves as a way to bolster the traditional finance system.
The finance has always been distributed. If we look at the large number of central banks, one per country, that's a distributed network, and the commercial banks beneath that that make up a distributed network. There's sort of 8,500 banks on the SWIFT network. That's a distributed network. So I think finance has always been distributed. the distributed tech or distributed ledger tech or blockchain has given us new tools and new mechanisms. The new tech that is coming through, finance has always been the first to experiment and the first to use it. What we are starting to see is actually we can use that distributed tech to improve what McKinsey always pointed out right at the beginning of this experiment, is that blockchain can solve cross-border payments.
You know, one of the things I'm quite curious to get your sense on around this, Richard, is for all the different solutions that you're offering, and that's the reason why I was asking, you know, these questions to begin with, is to say, in the work that you're doing, do clients or the people that you're providing, you know, solutions for from the payment system, have they gotten to a point where they, do they even care that this technology is running off of, you know, the blockchain, or is it a simple matter of getting to a point where it's simply saying, guys, we just have great technology and it's reliable and it's able to help you to scale your payments and that type of thing, where the focus is more on the utility as opposed to what the technology actually is? Because I find that sometimes when you are having these types of conversations, it almost sounds as if, you know, one party is almost fixated around the technology, whereas the counterparty might be more worried about what can we actually do? What is the utility of a platform when they're engaging, when they're signing on to, you know, a DXP? That's what they are caring about. How are you finding those conversations and interfaces with your clients going?
I think you're absolutely spot on. If we just cast our mind back to how the internet emerged, everyone was really interested in how the internet worked. People learned what TCP and IP was until they learned how to buy a book over the internet. And as soon as they used Amazon, as soon as they bought a book over the internet, nobody cared how the internet worked. The technology disappeared from view, and that's exactly what's happening to blockchain now. Like nobody asks how TCP IP works anymore. No one's really interested in the guts of, as the engineers are, you know, myself included, we are interested in the guts of how it works. But for the vast majority of us, we just want to solve a challenge. We want to solve a day-to-day problem. And that's where we've now discovered this killer app of cross-border payments that we can send a digital dollar, much like we do an email. We can send an email rather than a letter. We can now send a digital dollar rather than a bank payment. We have what we would describe an internet of money. So if we built for the last three decades an internet of information, that's what you think of as the internet now, you've just completed your first decade of an internet of value. And that's where the technology, we lose sight of that technology, just as you say, and we're only interested in now solving problems. The biggest one for most people is cross-border payments.
It's actually interesting when you're talking. I'm always reminded of a saying that I've learned over the years, and especially during my time when I was studying information systems in school, that the best technology is the type of technology that you don't even know is there. It just works.
I couldn't agree with you more.
And maybe just as a quick follow-up to that, Richard, is to say, you spoke a little bit about, I guess, the SWIFT system earlier on. And one of the things I've always wondered is, why haven't the likes of those big players made more use or made more noise about the blockchain? Because in essence, especially that distributed ledger that is quite characteristic of the blockchain lends itself, you know, to the type of thing that, you know, a a utility like SWIFT has been doing for decades, you know, for the payment systems. There's an instruction on one side, and then, you know, there's an execution of that instruction on the other side. And that's, you know, sort of helped to move money around the world, you know, for a really long time. Albeit it takes, you know, using the traditional systems, it takes days for those things to happen. But that ability to firm up an instruction on the other side and firm up an instruction on the other side, but still verify that, it would seem to me like that would be almost a perfect use case for, you know, the blockchain, because you are talking about how DXP is making, has created this killer app around remittances. And I'm just wondering why some of the more traditional players would not have made use of something like that. At least to my knowledge, you know, a bit more than what they are.
Yeah, I think we've seen a while ago the G20 come together, and this was 2020, I think, and say we're going to improve global payments. That roadmap was laid out, but the enhancements we've seen have really impacted the G7, not the wider G20 family. So I think what we've missed is the opportunity to focus on the G20. And we're actively contributing to the global goal of lowering. Sorry, well, if you look at that G20 roadmap, they asked whether we could enhance global payments, contributing to the global goal of lowering cost, improving speed and access and transparency of cross-border. That's what the G20 set out in 2020. They have been at this since 2020. They have made the G7 more efficient. But what we're now seeing with stablecoins is the fulfillment of that roadmap and that vision within the wider G20.
Makes sense from that point of view. And maybe if we can get into some of the practicalities, because I would imagine that something like that lends itself to, you know, various parts of the world, but especially in emerging market countries, there's definitely a big use case around using the blockchain for some of those, you know, cross-border payments and stuff like that. So maybe, Maria, you could give us some insight, you know, just around some of the utility. If I am here in South Africa and I want to send money to someone who's in Jamaica or in Brazil, how quickly can I do it, you know, using some of the tech that you guys have developed?
So within seconds. That's pretty much the answer. It's like the technology, you know, that we have, especially within DXP, we do it. It can be almost instantaneously. So it depends on if you're looking at an external party or an internal party. That's basically what will drive the time frame. So let's say you've got a subsidiary sitting in Jamaica or Brazil. Literally at the click of a button, it's there. There are additional processes involved in sending to a different third party, but yeah, within one day, that's max timeline.
You were giving us some examples earlier on of, you know, companies. I think you mentioned the likes of De Beers that are making use of, you know, technology like this. Any other that you could possibly point at, just around how people are actually making use of this type of tech?
So DP World have launched their own internal, effectively blockchain system, where they're it's serving a dual purpose. Number one, they're tracking all of their goods across it. So you can actually track the time a certain, let's say, product left the warehouse on the blockchain to when it gets to its end position. And on top of that, they're doing their payments into their subsidiaries, you, as far as I understand, using their crypto or stablecoin payment solution. So yeah, that's, I think, brings it home a little bit more. And it's probably a service, you know, that we don't even know we're using, but the majority of the people are.
Over time, what do you, because these are some great examples and case studies that you're giving us, what do you think would help to move the needle to make something like this, or at least the use of it, as mainstream as, say, what Swift has become, right? We keep using Swift because I guess they are one of the established, big established players, around this. People literally used to have to enter Swift code when they were making a payment, around these things back in the day. But right now, when it comes to, is it a company, big companies making use of this type of thing, like one of these examples? Is it countries, central banks maybe adopting this type of thing? Or is it just having like a whole bunch of these companies coming in, using the technology to a point where it tips over and then it becomes a little bit more mainstream?
So I think there are, it's got to be partnership driven. And in this, there are many stakeholders. And I think it's essential that, and I'll emphasize this, that all stakeholders are collaborating. It's no good if the governments and regulators are talking on their own, or the regulators and the financial firms are talking on their own. The most important person is the client at the end who's using the service and their user experience or client experience, right? So I think collaborations with these end users or stakeholders are essential. And those are what need to drive the streamlining of regulators, governments, let's say, and financial institutions. Only once those are aligned will we see this as mainstream, as you mentioned. And that's my view.
Right. Richard, we've heard a lot, when it comes to the world of financial technology around interoperability. And a big part of that discussion tends to be around, the partnership issue that Maria is talking about. From a DXP point of view, how do you decide who to work with in terms of, advancing, I guess, DXP's business, but also at the same time being able to, push either into new territories, new segments, markets, that type of thing? How do you guys think around who you work with from a partner point of view?
So from our side, it is a partnership. We see the clients first and foremost. We are driven by our clients. Our clients are very direct with us, their feedback, good and bad, and we adapt and evolve towards what they want, where they want us, when they want us, and what they want us for. I think that's one of the key stakeholders. The other would be the regulators. We are bound by those rules that the regulator gives us in our different jurisdictions. We're regulated in a number of jurisdictions, and we therefore have to comply with the same rules as a regulated firm, as every other regulated firm in the financial services industry. So I think those are the two main stakeholders. And then from that point, we are then driven by the adoption of the use of stablecoins across the different verticals. Different verticals are adopting at different speeds. And actually, that is what's driving us and our strategy as to where we go first and last.
And from a verticals point of view, if you could maybe call out one or two that you'd say have advanced, or maybe their rates of adoption have pushed up, to a place that you like?
Yeah, I think stablecoins were born in the crypto industry. That's a part of the financial services industries. And they are obviously now all using it. You push out into the wider financial services. Finance is always the first to experiment with new technology. And we are seeing brokers using stablecoins, accepting them for client funds, especially when they are banking them cross-border. So people are using it to deliver funds into their brokers. And then we go onwards out of the financial services, and we have seen places like real estate and transport, specifically in the high-end net worth super yachts and private jets, very much starting to use stable coins where there is a timely sense to it. If you've got a private jet and you need it refueled and you need to pay for that fuel, if you need to charter a private jet, then a bank payment turning up on Monday isn't going to be very helpful. And that's why we're seeing swift adoption inside those types of time-sensitive industries like transport and aviation, maritime, and then, as I say, real estate, which normally has a cross-border key to it, part to it. That is, that's where we're seeing adoption. Those are the industries, the verticals that we've seen adoption.
Yeah, they often say that necessity breeds a lot of innovation, and I guess it's no different. It's no different in this particular case. So, with everything that's been said, all right, throughout this discussion, one of the key challenges is obviously how you, and it's been a main theme throughout this discussion. We've spoken about how do you make some of this technology more mainstream. But over the years, we've seen that things like your stable coins have been able to get more people to embrace the blockchain, because at least it's backed by something that they know, you know, traditionally. And earlier on, we did mention some of the challenges around, you know, moving currencies and what some of that takes. We've spoken a lot about, you know, some of these, you know, cross-border, you know, aspects. Usually we think about it from a peer-to-peer, you know, point of view, but just also keen to get your sense, you know, around, you know, firstly, some of maybe the other key challenges, but also maybe enabling the e-commerce point of e-commerce type of discussion, because I think, like I said, when it comes to cross-border, especially, people often think about, you know, I want to send money from one person to another, but that ability also then opens up a lot more people, you know, to being able to participate in e-commerce and that type of thing, you know, to my understanding. So, you know, any insights you might have around that type of thing?
Yeah, sure. Okay. So a key challenge, I think, you know, taking it to a higher level would be the cost, time and accessibility to cross-border payments. We've seen strong investments in financial services within the G7, but less so in the wider G20. So cross-border payments, although relatively easy in the G7, are a lot harder in the G20, including South Africa. I'm sure your listeners have been on the receiving end of delayed and expensive cross-border payments. And that's a massive challenge we face today. So, for example, even in my own experience, time-sensitive payments have been delayed, sometimes even up to a month. And this leads to poor relations with clients and suppliers, and it has a massive impact on our top line. So, yeah, the cross-border challenge is definitely speed, really. And accessibility to be able to perform those transactions fast and with a trusted partner.
As you're talking, I'm reminded of a few years ago. This didn't happen on the blockchain, but it was with one of the fintech operators. I always tell the story that it was in 2018 or 19, and I was quite sparked by how quickly something could happen. I was able to send money from my bank account in South Africa into someone's mobile wallet in Kenya. And, you know, that was enabled by a string of different, you know, fintech operators and banks all working together. And that happened within, I'll call it, around 5 minutes. But, you know, you're talking about, you know, things happening within seconds. And I can imagine, to your point, that all of that lends itself to foster business, foster commerce, better relationships, you know, with clients and that type of thing. So maybe the thing I can pose to both of you as we, you know, are sort of landing the conversation is where we are now what DXP has done, what your competitors in the space are doing, where regulation is going, the posture that central banks have taken, all of that. When it comes to, you know, the use of the blockchain stable coins, what does the world look like in a, can I call it a post, you know, stable, is that what we can call it, a post, you know, stable coin world, where we're no longer looking at it as a novel idea? I guess the question I'm asking is if you can maybe paint us a picture, you know, of what changes, or do things just remain the same and everything is just happening faster, simpler, better, and faster?
So I think before we even go into the world, we just need to remember, you know, past lessons and what can we draw from crises that happened before. So in the past, I believe the crisis often reveals the vulnerabilities of over-reliance on a single point of failure. That's why CFOs and treasury officers, we multi-bank, because we don't want to rely on one bank. And then if I take it a step further, if all these banks are using the same payment rails and that payment rail, or rather system, goes down, we're a bit stuck. And even though, you know, stable coins are faster and cheaper, and we're seeing this adoption by treasury officers and CFOs and in South Africa as well, as an alternative payment rail, rather just having an additional form of payments and having that accessibility. You know, in a nutshell, I think looking forward, we're all going to have diversification. It's diversification of our assets, financial institutions, our payment structures. And once we obtain that diversification, we tend to reduce the risk that we face. And one of those, you know, one of those pathways being stablecoin payments.
Most certainly. Richard, your take on this one?
I think the resilience, I mean, Maria's a CFO, right? So, and she's been a treasury officer. So she understands that even if you're multi-banked, your payment rail goes down, you're stuck. I love that. I think that's really, really important part. From my perspective, you know, I've been in this for a while, both on the TradFi within UBS, RBS, and on the DeFi side, you know, I was with BCB during the FTX and Silvergate and Signature crises. I worked on both sides of TradFi and DeFi. They're both part of the wider global financial ecosystem. So when we look further forward, I continue to point to people and say, well, these two are converging, whether you like it or not, whether you come from the DeFi side or whether you come from the TradFi side, they might not make good bedfellows, but they are converging. And I'm always often found quoting the last line of Animal Farm, which was, the creatures outside look from pig to man and from man to pig and from pig to man again. But it was impossible to say which was which. So I think that's, for me, is where I'd leave it.
All right. I was just, I'm very amused by the quote that you chose, because I think it, it speaks to what we spoke about earlier on, about the fact that these seemed like disparate worlds back in the day. And I think that's one of the things that you've emphasized, Richard, through today's conversation, that, there has been that convergence of these different worlds. You know, people thought we were going to create some type of, you know, fully parallel structure, but the two worlds have collided. And, you know, here we are today, you know, talking about things like, you know, things like your stable coins. The last thing to wrap up today's discussion is emerging technology. Once upon a time, let's call it, once upon a time, blockchain was seen as an emerging technology. And it's had, you know, a big moment in the sun, you know, helped by the cryptos and that type of thing. But it's now a little bit more mainstream. Artificial intelligence, data analytics, machine learning have been around for a while. But for many people, these seem like, you know, new and interesting things. How are you seeing some of those emerging technologies, particularly AI, influencing the what you call this, influencing the world of finance? And whether we're talking DeFi or TradFi, how have you been seeing that influence coming through? Richard, I'll start with you, and then we can end off with Maria.
So I think there's always a sense in finance that any edge, any small improvement will have a dramatic impact, because we're talking about large sums of money on both the balance sheet and through the flow. So any change will improve both the bottom line and also our clients' experience and the fees that we can charge them. There's no doubt there's a huge amount of data inside finance, and applying machine learning as part of the AI family to that, we've already started to achieve, and we're seeing that coming through. On the LLMs, I had the fortune of helping build the AI bot that went on the RBS's website, and we saw some real positive behavior changes once we delivered that to the website and lifted clients onto the AI bot to be able to answer questions. And now that is a pretty standard piece. So I think we're seeing these technologies being adopted, thankfully, in positive ways. I think the AI has a long way to go in terms of what we can use it for. And I think we are starting to see newer technologies like quantum, and our heads are getting around that, and the quantum technology that is all being brought to bear on finance.
No, very nice. Maria?
Yeah, I think I'll echo a lot of that. As Richard mentioned earlier, finance is really always, or not always, perhaps most of the time, the first to experiment with new technologies. I think within most companies, every environment within that structure is really has some sort of leg into finance. So if we can gain any even marginal uptick in our daily operations or whatever it is, we'll take it. And the effects within our flows obviously have an impact on your top line or your cost base or whatever it is. So I think these technologies are going to see. I think the opportunities are endless, and these technologies we're going to see have a further positive impact going forward.
So that's how we end off today's discussion. It has been a great one, just understanding what's happening, in the world of blockchain and payments, understanding what's happening in the global economy and some of the opportunities that are open and that have been opened and enabled by use of the blockchain, being able to deal with some of the regulatory, demands and evolving market demands, and how you build resilience into global payment systems around that. A big part of today's discussion has been around stable coins and how that has been able to maybe move the needle for a number of different institutions and companies and operators out there in their use of the technology. I'm reminded of a few years ago when I think we were chatting with Visa, and I remember at the time they were talking about the fact that they may not always get into investments that have to do with crypto, but what they were bullish about, and I think this was a couple of years ago, was the blockchain technology itself. And we've actually seen that same comment being echoed by a number of financial institutions and banks, and I think today's discussion is a manifestation of that the underlying technology is something that creates a lot of value. And for today, one of the biggest areas, around this is moving money around the world and being able to do so within a very short, space of time. I don't know what the benchmarks are, but I think some people would say either real time or near real time. in terms of, you know, making some of those settlements happen. Very interesting to hear, you know, Maria talking about how quickly you can make some of that happen. Some of the examples that she gave, you know, around some of the companies that are making use of this type of technology and how that is helping to get more and more people, used to the technology, but also at the same time, making sure that people understand what's going on. At the same time, someone like Richard is letting us know that, yes, the technology can be great, but a lot of decision makers just want something that works. And at least for now, you know, the blockchain has been proving itself quite a bit, you know, from that point of view. Ending off, you know, talking about some of the challenges that are being helped to be solved along the way, learning from the past and how that is informing the design of global finance, and also at the same time making sure that clients understand the world that we're in and will be embracing more and more of the technology. So that's been it. We were in discussion with Maria Harati, who is the CFO over at DXP, together with Richard Cook. He is the CEO, and that's been it for today. Team, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is a good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.